and all, including you and you and you, and your sisters, your cousins, and your aunts. Diggers in Paris was previewed in Hollywood a week ago last evening. May I, on behalf of the cast, thank those of you who found our part from the picture worthy of your lovely and generous commendation. There's an island of enchantment where the flying fishes play, and a lazy breeze keeps nudging the trees on a tropical summer day. It's a paradise for dreamers, it's a land of missing men, for I understand that many who land may never come back again. It's a long, long way to Bali, but it's there that I would go, for of all the South Sea Islands, it's the only one I know. I want to go back to Bali, to that island of sunny skies. You can see those scenes in magazines, but you never can see the flies. Oh, it looks like our back alley, but still I love it more. For when the gals meet you down at the pier, they wear less than the ladies do here. If the day and the vision is clear, you can see the shore. Oh, I want to go back to Bali, where there ain't such a thing as dough, where to hug and squeeze the Balinese is always apropos. The Interlaken Valley may be the place to go still. I want to go back, and I'm going to go back to Bali. It takes all kinds of people to make a country like this, the well-known USA. Tonight we turn our attention to a thoroughly American institution, the Advice to the Lovelorn column, as represented by the Dean of Romantic Advisors, Miss Beatrice Fairfax. Until just recently, we shared a pretty general notion that Beatrice Fairfax was no more than a name, behind which probably lurked a series of cynical old ex-reporters with tobacco juice on their chins. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, this is a mistake. Miss Fairfax is one of the realest people I've ever met. A gay, hearty, charming person with a background of wide experience in newspaper work and a good-humored, fundamentally sensible approach to the problems she does her honest best to solve for other people. We think you'll share our liking for Miss Beatrice Fairfax. Miss Fairfax, how long have you been acting as a public consultant in affairs of the heart?
For 38 years, Mr. Valet. And if you value those attractive features, please don't ask me how old I was when I began.
Chivalry, Miss Fairfax, is ever our watchword.
It better be.
Curiosity, however, is our curse. How did you happen to start your column? Was it your own idea?
Yes, certainly. I was working for the New York Journal at the time. And quite a time it was, let me tell you. Mr. Hearst and Mr. Pulitzer were fighting their historic circulation war. The late Arthur Brisbane, my editor, asked for circulation building features, and my suggestion was the advice column. It worked out pretty well for the journal, and for me, too.
Are you a New Yorker, Miss Fairfax?
Certainly not. I'm the only white child born in Washington, D.C.,
The only white child ever?
That's a joke, Mr. Valet. In fact, it's been a standard gag in Washington since the administration of John Quincy Adams. You see, native Washingtonians are rare birds. but I'm one of them.
I'm afraid curiosity is getting the better of me, Miss Fairfax. But are you...
married? Of course I am. I've got two grown sons in Washington. One a Republican, one a Democrat. But I'm the umpire.
And a good one, I'm sure.
I hope so. I'm rather proud, Mr. Valley, that over 1 million people have sought my decisions on problems that appear to be vital to them. Not just romantic girls. People ask my advice about troubles and doubts and human bewilderment of all kinds. And I've built up a body of experience, facts, and resource, which I hope has been of real value to my clients.
Most of your clients do, however, seek advice on problems of the heart.
Most of them, yes. Problems of the heart, Mr. Valley, seem to be fairly universal.
Don't they, though? What question would you say is most frequently asked?
Oh, that's easy. Question number one is, how can I get my man to the altar?
And your answer?
Perhaps that question can better be answered by pointing out what one should not do. First, girls, don't be a cat. Don't say nasty and censorious things about other girls. Especially if those girls have strictly honorable intentions toward the young man you're catting to. Remember, nothing arouses chivalry and a sense of protection like saying mean things about another girl. And above all, don't pursue your man openly. A hunted creature is a desperate creature. He'll turn down any avenue of escape.
Good for him.
You see what I mean, girls. Men are easily frightened, so tread softly, lest, like handsome Rudy, your dream boy takes a powder.
Take a what?
Take a powder. Run out on you. Give you a quick brush. Take it on the Arthur Duffy. Why don't you listen to Bing Crosby?
Well, very often I do, and sometimes...
Never mind. To continue, girls, don't tell the boyfriends your troubles. Look sympathetic, and let him tell you his. He'll eat it up. Don't invite him to an untidy house or apartment. He'll see himself in such surroundings. Don't give him messy meals. Don't dance badly. Nothing is so mortifying as to be loaded up with a girl on whom there will be no cut-ins. Don't dress shabbily or in an eccentric manner that will attract attention when you go out with him. Men are more conservative than women. They hate to attract unflattering attention. And don't be stupid. At least know what is going on in this world about you. Read the papers. The day of the dumb daughter is passing.
Not on Broadway, Miss Fairfax. However, let's suppose that I am a young girl of 18.
Difficult, but possible. Go ahead.
Well, I've observed all the don't you suggest, but still, doggone it, my dream prince is drifting. Should I propose?
Certainly. Women have been proposing ever since time began. But it's a wise man who recognizes the preamble to a proposal. You men are convinced she listens to you in that flattering way because you're interesting. That she applauds your bridge, your golf, even your neckties, and the angle at which you wear your hat because you do those things supremely well. There's no mistaking the way she looks at you. It's the real thing. And the way she turns out trick dishes on the electric gadgets. She's a swell little cook and a good housekeeper, too. These, my dear sir, are some of the ways nature has taught her to propose. And get down on your knees and thank your lucky stars for it. Because, Mr. Valley, there's nothing quite so forlorn and lonesome as an unattached old bachelor. Now is there?
I wonder. Suppose, Miss Fairfax, that our predatory female has pounced on her prey and dragged him off to the altar, kicking and screaming. What does she want to know next?
How to keep him, of course.
Well, how is that done? What would you say is the 0 hour of married life?
Breakfast. Even to a water addict, there's a good deal of a hangover about facing a new day. Yesterday's brush with the boss. The big order you didn't get. The deal that hung fire. These loom bigger and blacker if there's a frowsy kimono opposite and traces of cold cream on the lady wife's face. Better an attractive negligee or house dress at breakfast to gladden the eyes of your husband, girls, than a glamorous party frock to incite envy in another woman. Send him out with a good breakfast. Remember, he put his digestion into your keeping as well as his heart.
And there, Miss Fairfax, I find myself in complete agreement with you. You know, I'd like to ask your advice on a certain matter, may I?
Why, Mr. Valet, with your looks and your position and your opportunities...
Yes?
You don't need any advice. So long now, and remember what I said about bachelors.
Watching the smoke from a pipe go curling on high. Watching the clouds make a crazy quilt in the sky. Watching the hands on the clock go soldiering by. While the moon throws dream dust in my eyes. Stringing along with a breeze that blows me a sigh. Singing a song of a love that never will die. Telling myself what a lucky devil am I. While the moon throws dream dust in my eyes. My vagrant wishes and idle dreams return in gold and silver caravans. The broken threads of an old romance weave again to give my heart another chance. Baiting my line with a wish and fishing for dreams. And a gleam of hope begins to rise while the moon throws dream dust in my eyes. Most of the band seem to feel that this will be the ideal theme song when we begin our third summer season at the Hotel Astor Roof on Tuesday next, May 24th. It's a lovely thing that'll sound well up on that beautiful roof. The stars and the clouds not far from us. Dream dust. Chin of yours, not so much to my heart. Oh, give your lips to me, for darling, that would be the final touch to my heart. You leave me breathless, that's all I can say. I can't say more because you take my breath away. course you recognize Bing Crosby's On the Sentimental Side. Jane Cowell in Rendezvous with Tomorrow. Among people interested in the theater, that perennial argument about who is the greatest active American actress always narrows down to a battle royal among the admirers of Jane Cowell, Ina Clare, Ethel Barrymore, Helen Hayes, Lynn Fontan, Catherine Cornell, Judith Anderson, and Grace George. The Jane Cowell for Queen party insists that its candidate is certainly the loveliest in person and in voice. Strong men have been known to weep with emotion when attempting to describe the power and the glory and the beauty of her Juliet. Certainly tonight, we swing our own vote to the Cowell column, and mixing a metaphor in our excitement, kneel before the altar of her bright and shining star. Her play tonight, Rendezvous with Tomorrow, was written by Hilda Lawrence. In it, you will also hear two other fine players, George Cowell and Alice Jones. Jane Cowell in Rendezvous with Tomorrow. It is twilight in a sleepy little village in a small white cottage on the edge of the town. Two women are alone. One of them lies quietly in bed. Her great dark eyes are dim with pain, and she looks ahead into nothingness. The other, a faithful servant, watches and waits. Finally, she speaks.
Miss Judith, do you want anything? Can't I get you a little something?
No matter. I don't want anything.
The doctor said you was to have anything you wanted.
Did he? He said something else, too. Something he didn't want me to hear. What was it, Matty?
Oh, that. That was good news, Miss Judith. He said you was going to get well. Real soon now, he said.
How soon?
Oh, almost any day now. You'll be better tomorrow, he said. And the next day, better than that.
Matty. Matty, are you crying?
No, ma'am. What did I be crying for?
Matty, you're not hiding anything from me, are you?
No, ma'am.
There's been an answer to my telegram. Michael isn't coming. And you're afraid to tell me. That's it, isn't it, Matty?
He isn't coming. Oh, no, ma'am. There hasn't been no answer. I'd bring it to you straight away, you know that.
Oh, Matty, if he doesn't answer that telegram, I don't know what I'll do.
Oh, he's going to answer all right. You got to give him time. He'll write a nice long letter back and tell you when he's coming. Then you'll know how foolish you've been talking.
Oh, it isn't foolish, Matty. You don't understand. I treated Michael very badly at one time. I said some stupid, cruel things.
He loved you once, didn't he?
Yes. But that was 10 long years ago.
Ah, but the minute he hears your voice again, you will both forget about that other time.
Will we, Matty?
Why, of course you will.
I wonder if he ever wanted to write and was afraid.
Of course he did. But how could he? He didn't know where you were.
Yes, but he knows now. And still he doesn't answer. Matty, it isn't a bit like Michael. He was always so thoughtful. I suppose that means he doesn't want to come. He's had plenty of time to answer. We sent it yesterday, didn't we? It was yesterday, wasn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Matty, I must have said the wrong thing. Or perhaps I didn't say enough. Matty, I wonder if I made it clear how much I want to see him and that I'm not angry anymore. Did I? Matty, tell me again. What did I say?
You just said, I need you.
I need you. I thought that would be enough.
Miss Judith, I just got an idea. Do you know that what I think?
No.
I think he was so pleased to hear from you that he just got on the train and come along.
Oh, Matty, you're wonderful. Yes, that's what he'd do. He'd probably come without a hat and not a scrap of luggage. And you'll have to go down to this village and buy him things.
Oh,
Matty, when's the next train due?
Most any time now.
Well, then listen. You will have to meet him for me. Explain why I can't come, but don't say anything to frighten him.
You know him, won't you, Matty?
I know him from his picture.
Well, of course, he'll look older now. It's been a long time since... Yes. Yes, it's been a long time. He may feel shy at first, but you'll know what to do. Talk to him, Matty, and make him laugh, and bring him here yourself, because he doesn't know the way.
But I don't like to leave you here alone.
Oh, I shan't mind for such a little while. Hurry.
I'm going.
And Matty, leave the door wide open, please. I want to hear his footsteps, if he comes.
Yes.
Judith.
Michael! Oh, Michael, I knew you'd come.
Nothing in the world could have kept me away.
Oh, I was so afraid you'd forgotten me. People do, you know. It's been such a long time, and I've missed you so. And I've written so many letters and torn them all up. You see, I didn't know how you might feel about things now. And then I knew I couldn't live another minute without knowing. That's why I... Oh, but you're here. Nothing else matters.
No, nothing else matters.
Oh, darling. There's so much I want to say and don't know where to begin. Do you know how ill I've been? Do you know how long I've been in this horrible bed?
Oh, you tell me.
Almost ever since... Well, just centuries. Remember how I used to hate being ill? Well, I still do. Have you thought much about me? About us?
All the time, darling.
Yes, so have I. I used to lie here all alone and remember all the things we used to do. And I wondered where we'd made the mistakes and where I'd failed. I'm afraid I wasn't very understanding, Michael.
We were both foolish, but that's all over now.
Oh, yes, it is, isn't it? Oh, Michael, you should have been a doctor. I'm getting better every minute.
You look swell.
Oh, do I? Well, that's been worrying me. You know, they won't let me have a mirror. Michael, how do I really look? Tell me.
Well, you look exactly like a girl who stood outside of Tiffany's one day and said...
Oh, yes. What did I say? You don't remember.
Well, you don't remember yourself. You're just trying to trap me.
Oh, no, I'm not. I remember every word. Yes, and every minute. I even remember a little man who was selling tulips on the corner. You see? Yellow they were. Now, go on. Tell me about that day. Oh, tell me. Tell me exactly.
Well, we'd been shopping for diamonds, no less. And when you discovered that even the little ones cost more than I could afford... You very kindly said you didn't want an engagement ring anyway.
And that I'd rather have a dog. Oh, Michael, you aren't a day older, and I'm getting younger every minute. Did you hear me laugh then? I wish the doctor had heard that.
Well, let's see if you can do it again. You remember the time when...
Oh, no. Now it's my turn now. I know. Remember the time that you tried to make me jealous? And went to dinner with that girl that lived across the hall?
No.
Oh, Michael, you must remember that. She had the longest eyelashes I ever saw.
Oh, eyelashes. Darling, take your hand away from your face. What are you thinking of now?
Nothing.
Yes, you are. Tell me. Tell me what you're thinking. You must.
I'm only thinking about you. And me. Michael, I've almost forgotten what the trouble was. I only remember words and tears and how afterward I was sorry, but too proud to say so. Michael, what did we quarrel about?
I've forgotten, too.
Oh, I wish we could live those years over again. I know so much more now than I did then. Michael, we spoiled our lives, didn't we?
No, Judith. I came to tell you about that. Our lives are just beginning.
No, you only say that because you're sorry for me. You don't really believe it.
I'm not sorry for you. I do believe it.
Oh, my darling. Oh, I wish I'd sent for you a long time ago.
Perhaps you weren't ready for me before.
Oh, darling, I wanted you every minute. But something held me back. Then yesterday and today... I couldn't bear it any longer. I had to see you. You. Only you. I was so afraid.
I knew you were afraid. That's why I came.
And you're never going to leave me again, are you?
Never.
And everything's going to be just as it used to be?
Just as it used to be.
Oh, that's heaven. To begin again where we left off. And to go on and on. Only, Michael, I don't want it to end.
It won't end.
Oh. Oh, Michael, it's dark in here. Is it getting late?
Yes, it's time for me to go.
Oh, no, no, no. Don't go. Don't leave me alone.
Only for a little while. I'm coming back.
Yes, but I'm afraid again. Something may happen. Michael, you might change your mind. Oh, if I lose you now,
Nothing can happen to us now. I promise.
Thank you, darling. When shall I see you again?
Very soon.
Ah, yes, but how soon? I want to know.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Early?
Early.
Oh, Michael. If I'm asleep when you get here, will you promise to wake me?
I promise. I'll wake you early tomorrow.
Oh, it's all right, Mattie. It's all right. Everything's all right now.
Yes, ma'am, it is. He sent a telegram. Here, read it, honey, quick.
A telegram? Well, but why didn't he... Oh. Oh, now I know. Now I understand.
What does Mr. Michael say?
It isn't from Michael. It's from his sister. She says, I regret to inform you that my brother Michael died 10 years ago.
Oh, Miss Judith, what are you going to do?
Do, Mattie. Do. Wait for tomorrow.
WEAS, New York.
The Royal Desserts Hour, Act Two, leading into a variety of fairs, including Paolo Spagnolo, child piano prodigy, a composer at six, Rags Ragland, new comedian, a personal find, and Irving Caesar, accompanied by Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou. Irving's safety message and song this week concerns that celebrated springtime custom, the sidewalk ball game. At the piano tonight is the composer of the music for the Caesar songs, Gerald Marks, who also wrote the notes for that other well-known and remembered tune, Is It True What They Say About Dixie? Enter Mr. Marks and Mr. Caesar.
Play ball, everyone likes to play ball. Sometimes you catch it and sometimes you miss. But when you miss, remember this. Let the ball roll, let the ball roll, no matter where it may go. Let the ball roll, let the ball roll. It has to stop sometime, you know.
Oh, gee, Mr. Caesar, that was swell elegant and everything, too.
Oh, hello, Betty Lou. What have you been doing today?
I was to the zoo, Mr. Caesar, where all the animals are, too.
The zoo?
Yes, and I certainly must have changed since I was a little baby.
Why?
Well, because the stork looked right in my face and never even recognized me, too.
Well, wait a minute, Betty Lou. How do you know it was the stork who brought you?
How do you know it wasn't an angel?
Because my daddy still talked about the size of the bill. I guess angels don't have bills, so they're too.
Well, darling, whoever brought you, and whatever it cost, I'll bet your mama and daddy think you're worth it.
Well, daddy does, but I don't think mommy is so sure since last night.
Well, what happened last night?
Well, mommy scolded me something awful just because I knew how to spell.
Oh, come now. Your mama wouldn't have scolded you for knowing how to spell. Now tell me, what happened last night?
Well, mommy was waiting for her new dress to wear to a party, see? And she told me to watch the door for it.
Uh-huh. Come on.
And a man came up the steps and said, a C-O-D for Mrs. Barry.
A C-O-D for Mrs. Barry? And what did you say?
I said, no, thank you, so he went away.
But, Betty Lou, why did you say no, thank you?
Because he didn't have what my mommy wanted.
But how did you know he didn't?
Because I can spell, and that's how I knew.
Because you can spell?
Yes, what my mommy wanted was D-R-E-S-S, and C-O-D is a fish. There.
Well, well, at least I know why you got your spanking.
You mean, Paul, did you know that I got a spanking, too?
Yeah.
Well, I got that spanking on account of my little playmate, Bobby. He teased me and broke my dolly.
You were spanked because little Bobby broke your dolly. How did he break it?
I hit him on the head with it.
Well, that was very wrong, young lady, hitting poor little Bobby with your dolly. The wicked old devil must have put you up to that.
Well, maybe he put me up to hitting Bobby, but kicking him in the shins was my own idea.
You've certainly had a very busy week. I hope you didn't do anything else.
No, only just one little thing.
One little thing? And what was that?
It was my fault a bottle got broken.
That a bottle got broken?
Yes, I was playing with my ball and it rolled into the street.
So?
Well, my granddaddy saw me run out to get it, so he ran out to get me.
Mm-hmm, go on.
And an automobile was coming along, and the man tried not to run over me. So instead he ran over the bottle and broke it, and that's all, too.
Well, that doesn't sound very serious. Did he puncture his tire?
No, but everybody was awfully excited.
I can't understand why. There was so much excitement over an old bottle.
Well, I can't either, unless it was because of where the bottle was when the man ran over it.
Because of where the bottle was? Where was it?
In my granddaddy's back pocket.
My goodness, was your granddaddy hurt?
No, but his back pants were an awful mess.
Well, I hope the whole thing will teach you a lesson, Betty Lou. And the lesson is this. Play ball, play ball. Everyone likes to play ball. Sometimes you catch it,
but sometimes you miss it.
But when you miss, remember this. Let the ball roll, let the ball roll.
No matter where it may go.
Let the ball roll, let the ball roll.
It has to stop sometime, you know.
Often a truck flattens the ball
and makes it look like a nail.
Though you can get many a ball,
you never can get a new lay.
At the piano, Gerald Marx.
Let the ball roll,
let the ball roll. It's fast to step sometime, you know.
Well, that's fine. And now, what do you do with the ball, Betty Lou?
What ball?
Why, any ball. That imaginary ball you're playing with.
Well, something must be wrong, Mr. McNee. I haven't got an imaginary ball. This is imaginary ice cream cone.
But when you are playing ball with a ball and you miss it, then what do you do?
Oh, that ball.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If that ball rolls into the street, what do you do about it, Betty Lou?
Oh, I let that ball roll. It wasn't a very good one anyhow, don't you?
Don't I what, Betty Lou?
Don't you know it's easier to get a new ball than it is to get a new leg?
Oh, so you did learn that safety lesson after all, Betty Lou. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find Irving Caesar's song, Let the Ball Roll, a great help to you in teaching your children these rudiments of safety. They like to sing these songs of safety, and they memorize them easily. So, to every mother and father who wishes it, we will send a full-size professional piano copy. The complete words and music of Let the Ball Roll. And to make the arrival of that package a real event in your home, we will include a set of cutouts, beautifully colored, to provide hours and hours of amusement for your children. And the little girl whose picture is in the cutouts is none other than...
Oh, let me tell Mr. McNamee.
Daddy wore a happy smile when his bride came down the aisle in that little old cathedral in the pines. When a baby filled their nest, he was taken to be blessed in that little old cathedral in the pines. He grew up and joined the choir where the organ played each day. And he found his heart's desire in a girl who came to play. Once again the wedding bells will softly peal, and while you and I before the altar kneel, I will hold your hand in mine as they did in auld lang syne in that little old cathedral in the pines.
Child prodigies are a bit out of our line, but we made an exception tonight to bring you the first American radio performance of little Paolo Spagnolo, aged 6, whose American concert debut in Town Hall was conspicuously successful. Paolo, born in Naples, is a composer as well as a pianist, which remarkable fact has led continental critics to compare him with the boy Mozart. His first selection, the Rondo movement from Beethoven's Sonata, Opus 49, number 1. Paolo Spagnolo. the 8 compositions Paolo has written for himself, the most brilliant is a scherzo for alternating hands. He plays it for us now. From all directions, you're just perfection's design. There's no to be or not to be. You've just got to be mine. I simply adore you. I was yours from the start. Just standing before you, there's a song in my heart. Let me love you forever. I want your love or none. I simply adore you, my adorable one. I simply adore you and a garden in Granada. Search of this program's voluminous files reveals a memorandum from one of our talented talent scouts dated January 12, 1933, in which we are urged to take a look at 2 comedians from burlesque, one named Eddie Green and another Rags Ragland. Eddie, as you know, we looked over, but Rags, I'm afraid, we overlooked. He's done well enough for himself in the past 5 years without our assistance, however. Recently, he emerged from the somewhat shabby atmosphere of burlesque to take a principal role in Elsa Maxwell and Leonard Sillman's Broadway Review, Who's Who? He's just been signed for a series of short pictures, and he came directly to my attention, and I realized his comic possibilities when I included him in the Valley Company at our recent low state appearance. We hastened to remedy an oversight of 5 years' standing by introducing the tall, gawky, good-natured Rags Ragland. Scene, a busy street intersection commanded by a traffic cop. Enter a jalopy containing Rags Ragland.
Hey, you! Can't you hear my whistle? Come on, come on, pull over to the curb. Now get out of that wreck and come over here. Yes, you, come over here.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's better. Now you hold still while I tell you plenty. Do you realize you were just going 60 miles an hour the wrong way on a one-way street? You crossed a white line, passed a red light, and now you're parked next to a fire plug.
What, something wrong?
Something wrong? You mean to say you don't know why I called you over here?
You must be lonesome, I guess.
Of course. What are you talking about? You just broke every traffic rule in this city. I suppose you can explain that. Now tell me, where were you going in such a rush? To a fire?
No, but you're getting hot.
Oh, a wise guy, eh? Say, I've got a good mind to punch you on the nose.
Oh, that's right. Now I remember. I'm going to the prize fights. I want to see One Punch Kelly.
Oh, yeah. You want to see One Punch Kelly? Well, before you see One Punch Kelly, you're going to see Judge Smith.
Who's he fighting? He must be in the preliminaries. I never even heard of that guy.
Listen, you. I'm speaking about Judge Smith. Were you ever up before, Judge Smith?
What time's he get up?
Listen, I don't know what time he gets up. Now, all I want to do is I want to see your license. Come on. Let me see your license.
I'm not getting married.
Oh, you're not getting married?
It must be rheumatism makes me look this way, I guess.
Look, don't you understand? I'm talking about your license, your chauffeur's license.
Yeah, but I ain't got no chauffeur.
Look, you dummy, I mean, where's your license to drive this car?
Oh, that.
Yeah,
right,
that.
That's home. I left that home.
You left it home?
On the dresser, I think, yeah.
You have one.
Oh, yes. I got it. Yeah.
Well, how did you get it?
I took a test, you know.
You took a test?
Yeah.
What kind of a test?
Well, you know, you get in the car with the guy, and you ride around, you stop, and you start, and you put $5 in the matchbox and drop it on the floor.
Sure. I see.
No trouble.
Well, tell me something. Whose car is it?
Oh, well, that I don't know.
You don't know? How come you don't know?
Well, you see, I was walking down the street, and I was kind of tired, see? So I saw this car sitting there with the nice cushions, so I just sat down and take a rest.
Oh, you merely sat down and take a rest?
Yeah, well, I had a bent hairpin in my hand, see?
I see.
I was fooling around like that, and... What do you think?
What happened?
The motor started.
The motor started?
I guess somebody dropped a nickel in it.
Oh, I see. A stolen car, hey? And to think that I was going to give you a ticket. But, of course, I can't give you a ticket now.
No?
No. You see, I'm going to take you down to headquarters and introduce you to the captain himself. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he gives you a personal apology.
Oh, I don't want to bother the captain. In fact, he's probably busy. People coming in and out all day long.
Oh, that's all right. Don't be silly. You wouldn't be bothering him. You see, he's always got time for nice fellows like you.
Yeah?
Oh, by the way, as long as you stole a car, why did you have to take that push cart with headlights?
Push car? Don't talk about that car. That's a good car.
Of course it's a good car.
Well, I did a lot of work on a car.
You did?
I painted it.
Well, I can see that you painted it. But what's the idea of painting half the car yellow and the other half purple?
Well, that's in case I have an accident, see? The witnesses will kind of get mixed up there.
I see. You want some of them to say that it was purple and some to say... Say, that's a very clever idea. But tell me, while you were fixing the car, why didn't you fix the fender? Look at it. Why, it's almost falling off.
Well, I loosened that on account of the motor. It made a lot of noise, see?
Well, do you mean to say that by loosening the fender, stopped the motor from making noise?
No, but now the fender rattles so loud you can't hear the motor.
Oh, I see. Well, it's very amazing. But I suppose your brakes have been inspected recently.
What?
I say your brakes. The brakes on the car.
Oh, we didn't get the accessories with the car.
Yeah, no. Who's talking about accessories? I'm talking about the brakes. Every car has a brake. How do you stop this car?
Oh, I just lean out and drag my foot.
You drag your foot. I see. Well, tell me something. Who covered that windshield with black paint?
Oh, I did that. That's on account of when I drive, the sun gets in my eyes.
Oh, well, what happens when it rains?
Well, I carry an umbrella and wear rubber.
No. What are you talking about? Do you have the audacity to drive this junk box at the rate of 60 miles an hour? Aren't you afraid?
Nope. Keep my eyes closed. See, but don't worry, I'm a very careful driver.
Oh, yeah, I can see that you're a very careful driver.
Sure, well, sometimes I even drive on the sidewalk.
Yeah, what? Wait a minute, you halfwit. Do you mean to tell me that you don't know the difference between the sidewalk and the gutter?
Sure, when I drive on the sidewalk, I hit more people.
Ooh, I see.
Yesterday, I got 10.
Yeah, a bad day, huh? Well, only hit 10 people.
I can't hit everybody. I've got to miss sometimes.
I see.
But yesterday, I had an excuse.
What was it?
I was drunk. Yeah,
drunk? Why, look, you idiot, don't you know that you shouldn't drive a car when you're under the influence of liquor?
But that's the reason I drove the car.
Well, why?
I was too drunk to walk.
I suppose now you're going to tell me that you didn't have any accidents either.
Well, I hit a tree, but it really wasn't my fault.
You hit a tree, but it wasn't your fault.
No. Mm-hmm. You see, I was going along the road, and I saw the tree, so I blew the horn, I held out my hand, I threw it on the brakes.
Wait a minute, don't go any further. I know, the tree didn't move.
How'd you guess?
Now, look, I've heard enough of this. Come on down to the headquarters. Oh, by the way, where did you come from?
I'm from New Jersey.
All the way from New Jersey, eh? Well, tell me, how did you ever get through all that traffic?
Just went right through.
Look, let me tell you something. You're a pretty decent sort of a chap. I mean, you remind me of a good-natured, overgrown country boy. I really don't think you mean any harm to anyone. I'll tell you what I'll do with you. There's one thing I would like to find out. And if you're truthful about the matter, I'll forget about giving you a ticket.
Well, I always tell the truth.
Do you tell the truth about this thing?
Yes, sir.
All right, now tell me. Just how did you get through the Holland Tunnel?
Well, there's a hole on the other end.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, your grocer wants you to try Royal Puddings for ice cream. For your old friends, Royal Puddings can be enjoyed in two ways. You can serve them as regular puddings.
Let the ball roll, let the ball roll, no matter where it may go. Let the ball roll, let the ball roll, it has to stop sometime, you know. Often a truck flattens the ball and makes it look like an egg. Though you can get many a ball, you never can get a new leg.
Youngsters remember these safety lessons better when they sing them. So if there are precious young arms and legs in your house, send for this song, Let the Ball Roll, before next Thursday. Only one Royal Desserts package front and 10 cents entitles you to the song and the Betty Lou colored cutouts. Address Royal Desserts, 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City.
Company, tomorrow evening, Friday, will play a benefit in Baltimore, Rhode Island, in Baltimore, Maryland, at the 5th Regiment Armory for the benefit of Crippled Children's Fund, auspices of the Boomy Temple Shriners. Next Thursday evening, our cast will include Judy Canova, Professor William Lyons Phelps of Yale, Irving Caesar, Tommy Riggs, and Betty Lou, among others. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Among the selections heard on this program, You Leave Me Breathless from Coconut Grove, Let the Ball Roll from Sing a Song of Safety. This is the National Broadcasting Company.